start the recording. Okay. So why don't we go ahead and get started? We got a bunch of people on the phone. We got a bunch of people on the web. And so I just want to welcome everybody for starters. This is Elaine Taylor Klaus with Impact ADHD, and we want to welcome you to our monthly webinar series. And I'm thrilled this week to have my friend and colleague and Sherpa, Judith Bass, who is, you know, when I first started years ago, I still remember to this day, Judy, the first conversation that you and I had. Mm-hmm. When Diane and I first started Impact, you were, I think, one of our very first guest experts, and you were so mm-hmm. sweet and so gracious. I had read something you wrote in Psychology Today or Attention Magazine or something, and I was so mm-hmm. I was so enamored of you and how wise I found you to be. And how helpful I found it to be. And you were incredibly gracious. We had this wonderful phone conversation when you agreed to start collaborating with us. And we've now, you know, been working together for a number of years. You've done a lot of yeah. webinars for us and telesummits and written pieces. And so I want to thank you for that. And really introduce you to our parents and our community as someone who has really for many years now been my guide as I was sort of bringing teenagers in that transition period to college, and one did go to college and one did not go to college, and mm-hmm. So far. And but you know, you have trained the person who actually ended up supporting my child in the college process. You've been a big influence in my life, both personally and professionally. So I'm thrilled to have you here. And I love the topic we chose for this webinar about the independent teen with ADHD and really preparing for life beyond high school, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to sort of let that be my introduction to you and then let you introduce yourself and take it away. And, you know, I'll be here to sort of ask questions or clarify as we go along, and then there will be some time for Q&A at the end. So welcome, Judith Bass, an educational consultant extraordinaire and a really fabulous guide for helping kids, teens transition into college and beyond.
Well, thank you so much for that, Blaine. I appreciate the introduction, and I've enjoyed working with you as well over the years. So, yes, our topic is the independent teen with ADHD, preparing for life beyond high school. I'd like to tell you a little bit about my background. As an educator, I've worked with many students over the years with ADHD and other learning differences, and as the last 16 years as an educational consultant, helping students transition to college and other post-secondary options. But my education really started a lot earlier in life when my brother was diagnosed in the early 1960s with ADHD, which at the time was called minimal brain dysfunction.
My brother was diagnosed with minimal brain dysfunction too.
Oh. Wow.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
Same time.
And so my mother, fortunately, having her third child, said there's nothing wrong with my son's brain. And while there were no laws, I watched my mother advocate for my brother all the way through high school, sit with him with the typewriter, fight to get him to not have to do certain assignments or the number of math problems. And I grew up watching my mother become an advocate. My mother also had dyslexia. And so, you know, I continued on in that vein of continuing to help these students that I love and that I see such potential in, and then marrying one. My husband has ADHD and dyslexia, and of course so do several of my children. So so that's my background, and I'm hoping that what I cover today is going to assist you in preparing your teen for high school, college, or independent living, whatever your child's future holds, but the key word here is independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to start.
So if you get started, right before you dive into your slides, let me just remind people that I do have people on mute, and if people have questions when we get there, we'll ask you to press star 2 to raise your hand. but they can type the questions they have as you're speaking into the Q&A box at any time. And if they do that, I'll see them, and if it's relevant to where you are in the presentation, I'll be able to ask the question real time. So please go ahead and type your questions into the Q&A box or into the chat box so that I can see where you are and interact with Judy as appropriate. Thanks for that interruption. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. So you may have concerns about some of these issues here. These are very typical areas of concern for parents with students who have ADHD and or executive functioning issues. And so what I would like to do today is discuss and help you understand some of the challenges your children might be facing that you might or might not be aware of, why it's so important to develop strong executive functioning skills as early in life as possible, and how you can help foster those skills in your child. These students that we're talking about need structure, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those ways to do that, ways to create that structure. So let's start with some common misconceptions. Unfortunately, your child picks up a lot of verbal and nonverbal cues that he or she is not doing what he's supposed to be or not performing the right way. And some of these are pretty negative. Some of them are nonverbal. You know, a teacher rolling her eyes at a student who forgets his homework may not think the student picks up on that. So these are, some of them are first out of frustration. You know, the student is lazy or the student is dumb. And I've had many students call themselves lazy because that's what they hear. And that L word is not allowed in my office. I tell them, you know, you are not lazy. Have you ever heard, any of you, a child get up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to fail today. That's my goal. Okay. They are not looking to fail. But after a while, after negative comments for years and years and years, you end up with students who have given up. And so you might hear that enough times that it starts to sink in.
So, well, and I just have to tell you, Judy, it strikes me that lazy and dumb are both four-letter words.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. We don't use them. And right. I don't let parents either. When parents say, oh, he's just lazy, I say, no, your child is not lazy. And I go on to explain the difference. And I'll tell you, my husband still considers himself lazy after all these years, because that's the message he got. And no matter what I say to him, he can't understand that it's not laziness. He knows it intellectually, but he feels it. Oppositional, we see this a lot in young children. They are oppositional, but it's their ADHD, not that they have any kind of another diagnosis. My son is doing this on purpose to drive me crazy. Your son isn't thinking about you at all. That's what's driving you crazy. And the interesting one here is the student who's drawing or doodling, which helps him pay attention, and the teacher who pulls the paper away and says, look at me when I'm talking. And, of course, the student looks at him, and the student's thinking, the mouth is moving, and the student's saying, I wonder if my teacher's married. Does he have a dog? All the things that the teacher's asking for have gone out the window because now the student can't pay attention. And then you have, my daughter does well in math. She should be able to do well in history. Okay, this really causes frustration in students, especially the very, very bright students who know they should be able to do well but don't know why. They're not interested in the subject, bottom line. You know, that's it. Or it wasn't taught in a way that really grabs their attention. And this is a good one. The best way for my child to focus is when he's still and the room is quiet. I thought that about my daughter for years until we had battles in middle school when I finally gave her the opportunity to try it her way for a semester, and it worked. I realized that I have a different brain. She needs white noise to work. Silence to her is too distracting. And this student is perfectly capable, but he never puts effort into his work. This is not a motivation issue. This is a frustration of students who have such black and white thinking. They know that no one understands them, and they don't have the way to explain it, especially for the twice exceptional students who they know they're capable. But why work for a teacher?
Mm-hmm. Will you explain what you mean by twice exceptional? Because you and I know what the term is, but not everybody does.
Sure. Sometimes also called gifted and learning, gifted with a learning disability. It's a student who's so, so bright, but might have some very low areas of weakness that are so discrepant that it really prevents the student from doing his best. For example, you would have a student who might have working memory is a very weak area for a lot of students with ADHD. So they're very capable of doing work and capable of doing well on a test, but they just don't have that ability to remember things that they need to remember. So they appear to be not caring or not putting effort in. But the truth is they're very frustrated because they know they should be able to. And then the worst one, if a student cannot be organized or manage his time well, he will never be able to succeed in college or in life. Okay. How many adults with ADHD are leading very successful lives? They're entrepreneurs. They've gone into many professions. As long as they're in the right profession for their learning style and the way their brain works, they're incredibly successful. And many colleges recognize these students as what we would call late bloomers. They might not have been successful in high school, but they have great scores on their ACTs. They've started businesses. They've been involved in activities. And a lot of colleges look at these students and say, we're going to take a risk because this student has potential. So if you think about the student who has poor grades because he's missing homework or he fails a test because he forgot to study, years of this kind of failure causes some students to have a resilience that the straight-A students, where everything comes easy to them, don't have. And so some of these are really great. And when they can get positive reinforcement, they develop really good resilience, and that's what helps them succeed. They just need one person to believe in them to know that they can do it, and they can do it.
Well, and can I add something to that, Judy? And that's
that's
where playing to the strengths comes in, right? So it's
if
we can help them see the successes in some areas, not necessarily all of them, then they can learn to be more resilient in the areas where they struggle.
Exactly. You're not going to be – none of us is strong in every area.
Exactly.
And we all work with our strengths. If you like to read, you read a lot. If you don't like to read, you don't. You do something else. Some kids are best in sports, and you can turn sports into leadership training.
Yeah.
So, yes, it can be anything. So,
I often say these are kids who are specialists' brains in a generalist's world.
Exactly.
Right?
And they're not appreciated. That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. So what's really going on? We need to identify the issues. Maybe your child is having, you know, what's causing the ADHD to come out? What's causing whatever issues you're seeing, anger, moodiness, withdrawal, you know, whatever it is, hyper conversation, speed talking. Is your child feeling bullied or feeling excluded by friends? Do people call him? Do they not call him? Is he home with family all the time and not having an outlet? Is he fighting with siblings or parents all the time? Does he wake up in the morning irritated before he even gets started? I know that my daughter was like that, and it was fascinating to me that when we finally decided to put her on medication, and she also had some tics, so it was very difficult to find a medication for her, and we resisted for a while. She woke up one morning, and she was eating breakfast, and I said to my husband, she ate what you made. He said, yeah, she started her medicine yesterday. She never wanted what was on the table. If he made pancakes, she wanted waffles. If he made waffles, she wanted eggs. She was so contrary. And then we realized this is part of the ADD. This is part of her sort of inflexibility that she needed to have, you know, worked on. And then in school, you know, are your child's grades slipping? Are your teachers calling you in to, you know, be out of concern? Your child's so bright. This is a problem. So all of these are causing low self-confidence, low self-esteem, and you need to find out what's at the root of all of this to help your child. So if your child hasn't been evaluated for ADHD and you're just suspecting that that's going on, now's the time for an evaluation. Talk to the teachers, talk to the counselors, and get advice from professionals. You know, find out if this is something you need to evaluate further. A lot of times we hear students, parents say, well, I thought he had ADHD, but the diagnosis said no because he didn't meet all six of the criteria he met, or all eight, he met five. Well, whether you have a diagnosis or not, if the symptoms are there, you need to work with your child to help him learn how to navigate the system, basically, how to have skills to deal with that. So what are some of the challenges that we get? Difficulty planning for the future, poor self-esteem and self-worth. Developmental delays are a big one. And my daughter, they say that children with ADHD are generally 3 to 5 years behind in development. Well, that was very true of my daughter. And when she was 18, I would have to say to myself, this is what a 13-year-old would do. And that put it in perspective for me because her behavior was that of a 13-year-old. So even to this day, she's older, I still have to stop and think, you know, okay, at 25, she's more like an 18-year-old. She's still impulsive. She's still going to make poor decisions. Her brain is still maturing. So that's part of thinking how to handle this. And then you have organization, time management, of course. Many students have issues with social skills, either totally withdrawn or too involved and not being aware that how they're being perceived. Of course, self-control issues and inflexible thinking. So these are challenges that students need to really learn. They need to learn the skills to deal with these issues before they can be ready to move on. And of course, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Your son has a very short attention span, Mr. Clayton, as he's looking in the trash can. Okay. So here's another
my favorite
way.
Line, there's nothing wrong with my son. He's just like me, right?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And we hear that a lot. In fact, many parents are diagnosed when their children are.
Yeah.
For the first time. So what happens when an orchestra has a weak conductor? And if you're not familiar with how an ADHD brain and how it works, this is a good example. Okay, all the instruments come in over the wrong time. They don't play together. The orchestra, the conductor doesn't know how to conduct, so the orchestra cannot function. If your child isn't able to start homework, it's because the flute is playing over the trombone, which is playing over the oboe and the violin and the cymbals are all clashing at the same time, trying to get out all at the same time. So if you can't prioritize anything, you can't get started. And a lot of us don't understand that. Say, just sit down and do the first assignment. But if your brain is telling you that everything is equally important, you can't do that. So making a list is really helpful. A lot of times students with ADHD resist list making because that requires prioritizing. But if you talk with them and say, well, what are some of the things you have to do? I'll write them down for you. And you make a list. Once the list is there, they can tackle each individual assignment. But it's getting that list out of their head onto a piece of paper so it can be organized. They can't organize it internally. And often you see this, okay? These are my visual cues. Your brain might be very different from your child. Okay, we don't all think and process alike. My husband, as I said, who has ADHD, he can't seem to leave any counter or tabletop empty. If I clear it, I give it about 2 hours. before it has keys, the mail, his coat even, on that table.
Even in my house.
Yes. It's always cluttered. However, he knows where those things are that he put there. If I clean up that mess and put it in a pile, I've destroyed his system. So I'm not saying it's good to see messes all the time, but there is a method to organizing it. They need to learn a better method to organize, but they do have something that works for them. They just need something better. Okay. So what are your options as a parent? You go through all this. You hear all these things. You can do nothing and let your child sink or swim. Or you can micromanage, being that helicopter parent, doing homework together, going on Edline or whatever online system your school has, being too involved with the school personnel, being overly involved in supporting your student as he gets older, when he could be doing it, and just enabling, doing for your child what he can do for himself. And I'll give you an example of when you micromanage your child, things get done, but your child begins to feel more and more inadequate, because the message he's getting is that he can't do anything. So what I like to propose is that your child is better off getting a C in a class that he legitimately earned on his own and figure out how to earn, than getting an A with so much help that he's not part of the process. Because, again, just to project into the future, the students with straight A's are not the best students. The students who've worked hard for their grades are the best students. Colleges, there are 2,000 colleges in the country. Okay, we're not all looking for straight A students. Colleges take a variety of students, and they can have C's and B's and still get a good college education, and there are hundreds and hundreds of schools that want them. So keep in mind the goal is learning, self-advocacy, and independence. You want your child to be independent before leaving home. Here's an example of a student who works on a college essay. I work with students through the process, help them with their essays, but I'm doing a brainstorming with them. I'm helping them think through their essay, and we work on it for hours and hours, you know, weekly. And they come up with something that's all their own work. They're really proud of it. And then they show it to their parents. And their parents either poke holes in it or say, that's not a good topic. There's so many more things about you. Let's write about something else. And the student is completely crushed because they've done something for themselves. And the essay is supposed to be who they are. It's supposed to be from them. It's not meant to be written the way a parent would write it, or a teacher, or a tutor. And so keep in mind how your child perceives what you think of as important help. So what can you do? You can set up scaffolding. You can provide a structured home environment, make it conducive for learning. You can set up a daily schedule on paper. You can help prepare the homework area, and then find outside support for your child. Rather than you being the one to get involved, find tutors or teachers, neighbors, coaches. Assistive technology would be Kurzweil or Where There Be Dragons or any of the – or Inspiration, tools where they can dictate, tools that can read to them. And take yourself out of the equation by the time you're in high school so that they can really learn to do it themselves. The professionals are saying the same exact thing that you might say, your child's going to hear it better from a professional than from you.
So could I just offer something to that? Because I completely agree with you. And what I would say is that there's also a way to play that role, because a lot of people can't afford the tutors and the others. But if you are the one to be that in that role for your parent, for your child, is to do it with their permission, right? To do it with their request. It was one of my kids. I was always able to play that role because she was self-advocating and asking for my help instead of me insisting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's part of it. It's not that you can't be, but that you don't want to impose yourself. You want to offer yourself. And that's, you know, it's a process of communication that shifts to be able to be that in that role for your kid. But for
right.
those parents who are like, I can't afford, I can't, you know, there are peer tutors, there are other ways to do it. But if it does fall on you, there are ways to negotiate that communication
sure.
to empower your child.
And that's true. And as a parent, you can do some of this. You can also look to your school for teachers and peer tutors to just do an initial explanation of what it means, and then you can take over as well. And here I say, mutually agreeable process. You need to have buy-in from your child to get things done. And again, you can say, as Elaine said, how can I help you? What would be the best way for me to help you? Positive rewards. Again, negative consequences do not work with students who have ADHD. My daughter,
say
the
that again.
I get negative consequences, yes, do not work with children with learning with ADHD. My daughter, what I learned from my daughter was if I said you cannot have something or you cannot do something, she would respond with, that's okay, I'll just go read in my room. And she was perfectly content to go read in her room. But if I said, after you clean your room, let's go out and get ice cream, or let's go watch a movie together, that room was clean in no time because there was a goal and a purpose and a reason for getting it done. And you'll find this with students even with college, the college process. If you don't get this essay done, we're not XYZ. Well, they're not going to get the essay done. But if you go visit a college and they can see the motivation, they can see, now I understand why I have to do homework. Now I see what the goal really is. That can turn things around. So the positive. Involve them in positive activities, things they're good at. I always make sure that both of my girls, when they were young, were in completely different activities, not just because they had different talents, even if they had similar ones, so they wouldn't feel like they were comparing themselves. Because, again, students with ADHD are very different. And I'll tell you, my brother and my daughter were kicking daisies in the field when they were playing sports, and we decided early on that they're not cut out for group sports. They're cut out for individual sports like karate or a talent, music, dancing, you know, something like that, because they could do it on their own and their own way. My daughter could never follow the dance routine, but she was a great dancer, but you never saw the same routine twice because she couldn't remember it. So she would just do something new. And then, of course, medication, diet, exercise, and sleep. Sleep cannot be understated. Or overstated.
Underestimated, right.
Underestimated. Sleep is so important. And again, we know that the teen needs sleep. We know that they don't get enough sleep because they tend to stay up late. But somehow we have to be able to manage getting as much as they can, whether it's not having a first period class in high school. If that's an accommodation that can be gotten, then that's a good thing to have. So what are some of the best learning environments for students with ADHD? Hands-on experiential learning. I think we all know that. Internships and paid summer jobs. I put this under learning because not all learning takes place in the classroom. And, in fact, many students with ADHD learn very little in the classroom. What they do is something piques their interest in the classroom. They might not focus on it, but then they'll go home and read about it, look it up, do something about it to learn it on their own, watch it on a Discovery Channel or a YouTube video. They learn what they want to learn, and when they're interested, they're going to learn it. So internships and paid summer jobs are a great way to learn something. It doesn't have to be in the classroom. Interactive classes, having a reduced course load or not as many academic classes, maybe some non-academic classes to fill the day, carefully chosen teachers and counselors. It's so important for children with ADHD to know that the person that is responsible for teaching them gets them, understands them, likes them. Because you may see this, I've seen it with my child. They have such black and white thinking that if they think the teacher doesn't like them, why should they do the work? They're going to get a low grade anyway. They don't see that they're sabotaging themselves. So again, challenge them positively. Well, prove the teacher wrong. Make him give you an A. Work hard to make him give you an A, even though he doesn't want to. And then summer experiences can boost self-esteem, and that's what these students need in the summer, not more academic work. They need a break. But summer experiences that boost self-esteem, that might be empowering, that might be high ropes type courses, even in your local county summer camp, you can find these experiences. So gather the village, slowly walk away, and watch from a distance. That's sort of the overall picture of getting as much support for your child as you can, whether you're the support, whether the school is the support, and then let them do what they can on their own and come in and offer assistance when you feel that it's needed, as opposed to assuming up front that it's already needed. So I'd like to talk about fostering independence. And this chart here is one I like as a good visual, because you see that self-advocacy is in the middle. To me, all things lead to good self-advocacy skills. For a student to feel comfortable advocating, he needs to first be aware of his learning style, be aware of his strengths and weaknesses, and be accepting of them. So how does that happen? Well, students need to understand that ADHD is a part of who they are. It's not who they are. It doesn't define them. When a student at this age, by the time they're in high school, has a new psychoed testing done or has a school testing done, he should be able to sit down with the psychologist and be explained what his learning is, what her style of learning is, accepting that here are my strengths and here are my weak areas. This is what I'm good at, and this is what the way I should proceed. And an awareness of what that means, an awareness of what accommodations do I need, what services would help me. Oh, I see, I get distracted easily, so I shouldn't sit near a window. I lose my focus, so I should be in the front row. I tend to daydream a lot, but if I'm fidgety, I can squeeze a ball or I can play with something in my hands. That's going to help me stay focused. And then that leads to the responsibility that the students take on owning their own learning. If I can accept who I am and I have a lot of positive people around me who are being encouraging me and saying, your brain is just different than the next person's brain, which is different than the next person's brain. This is just how you learn. This is what you need to do. Then I can start taking responsibility for myself. So when a psychologist can discuss the strengths and weaknesses with your child, and he or she doesn't need to hear diagnoses or, you know, the names of things. It's just, this is what you need to be successful. And, of course, then we add life skills. So all of these things lead to self-advocacy. And life skills, for example, we're going to talk about in a minute, but life skills mean being able to take care of yourself in certain ways, that you can get yourself up in the morning and you can take care of what you need to do and to get ready for the day. So starting in middle school, students should start attending their own IEP and 504 meetings. By high school, they should be speaking up at some of the meetings, and by junior and senior year, they should be leading the discussion. The student should be able to talk to his or her teachers at an IEP or 504 meeting to say, this is what I need. The parents should be there for support, because you can practice, you can role play ahead of time, but if the student is capable of doing this in high school where she's comfortable, it'll be a lot easier for her to do it in college when no one else is there. So I can't stress enough how important it is to start as early as possible. We don't think about these things, but self-advocacy takes many forms. So think about this one area. We teach young children not to talk to strangers. But that's it. Don't talk to strangers. When should we start teaching them that it's okay to talk to certain strangers? By the time they're in college, they have to talk to strangers. So what are some ways you can do this? When you're in a store with your child, with you there, have your child ask for help. You know, excuse me, I'm looking for this toy. Can you help us find it? You're there. You're teaching your child that this is an okay person to talk to in a store. He's wearing a badge. He works in the store. Ordering in a restaurant. My 5-year-old granddaughter loves to order in a restaurant. In fact, we don't even get a chance. The waitress comes over and she goes first, I would like to have, please. And she tells them what she wants. And if she doesn't get it completely right, that's okay. We might add something on when we put our order in. But it's fun for them when they're young. They don't see it as a chore. They don't see it as fearful. And again, you're letting them know it's okay. A bank transaction. And then ultimately meeting with a doctor, dentist, or a professor in college. Your child needs to know how to speak up for himself or herself in these situations. So think about every opportunity you have to do that. I have parents come in my office and I ask their child a question and I hear somebody speaking, but I don't see the mouth moving. And the parent answers. And the child's quiet because that's how it's always been. So they need to really be able to speak up. Okay, these parents are trying to reconcile their daughter's need for independence with their ability to run her life better than she does. Okay, again, it's a good balancing act. Okay, so the life skills we were talking about, these are some that I find very, very important. Can your child wake herself up in the morning with an alarm clock or with whatever measure without you? If not, it's going to cost you a lot of money in college for your child to sleep through classes. And you'd rather, I think, fix that problem now. And I went through this with my daughter, too. It's not easy to do. But one thing I recommend is setting one day a week, discussing it with your child, and say, on Wednesday mornings, I'm not waking you up. Make sure you set your alarm. I'm going to work. And if you can't get up, you're going to have to find your own way to school, whether it's walking, you know, taking a bus, whatever it is, or you're going to miss school if there's no way to get there. But that's a good wake-up call because the teachers and the school are going to have something to say about it. And it's an easy lesson to learn.
What age are you talking about doing this?
High school. Yeah, okay. By high school. Not a young child. But, you know, by 11th grade, 12th grade, your child should be getting up by himself most of the time. So it's something you can work on with your younger children, but of course you're going to wake them up. That's not the same. Laundry. When my son was in 7th grade, he was a basketball player. He wanted to know how to wash his uniform, and I showed him, and I said, guess what? All of your laundry is washed the same way. Now you know how to do your laundry, and he's been doing his laundry since then. I don't do it anymore. Meals, can your child cook a simple meal? You know, scrambled eggs, boiling water. With your help, teach them to do these things. And medication, very important. Does your child know the name, if he or she takes medication, does he or she know the name of the medication? The names are so long and so cumbersome in the generic nowadays. They need to know the brand name and how much they take and what they take it for. That's very important because they're going to need to know that when they go away to college. God forbid there's an accident or something happens. They need to be able to tell any medics what they take. And money management. And this one also, I should have known with my daughter, again, that she would have no concept of money. And when you have everything on a card, like you do at college, everything's on what we would call a debit card. It's a school card. Not only are your meal plans on there now, but your books, you can spend money anywhere on campus and many times off campus at restaurants and some of the local CVS stores. You can use that card, and now that card is reloadable. So if your child decides to treat his dorm to a pizza party, That money can be gone by October if he doesn't have a sense of what it's for and how it needs to be spent. My daughter at 19 called me up one night. She was away at a program, and she and her friend were at an ATM, and she said the ATM is broken. Both of them tried to get money out, and it said that neither one of them had money, and therefore, in their mind, the machine was broken. It never occurred to either of them that they had overspent the amount of money that they had. So it's very important. One way to do this is to give your child a debit card by 16 or 17 and put on it a monthly amount, and you can hook this up to your checking account, a monthly amount that maybe you give them anyway to go out with friends or to buy certain things, and tell them what it's for. And then tell them, this money is for this month to spend on going out with your friends or to spend on toiletries and makeup or whatever, or gas money. And if you run out before the month is over, then you're out. It's a very easy way to teach them how to stretch that money. And maybe you need to start out weekly. Maybe, you know, they don't know how to do monthly.
So, Judy, before you move on, can I just make an observation on all of these life skills? Because I think you've hit some of the key ones.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if we sort of stay here for just
a
second?
Sure, of course.
Because I mean, this is like, if you had to say what are the five most important things, I think you've totally captured it and given us some really good strategies for how to begin to shift what we call sort of passing the baton, right? Shifting the responsibility from us to them. I want to, sort of pulling from what we do with the coach approach, add to it a little bit to remind parents that you want to address all of these, but not at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's really important that you take aim, that you do them one at a time, that you get your child's buy-in so that you know you're both agreeing. Like, you know, that idea of having him or her wake herself up one day a week or 2 days a week or whatever. Make sure that she agrees that she's ready to take on that job and that she's taken the baton and said, yeah, okay, I'll do this. You don't want to just impose it. You want to work together to say, okay, which one of these life skills are you ready to work on next? And sort of go into it together, planning it together so that you know when you pass that baton, they're actually there to receive it, and it's not just dropping on the ground.
That's a great point.
And that's sort of the context
for
what you're saying that I think is really important to remind people. We don't want to decide for them. We want to decide with them.
That's a great point. And in that vein, you can take a year to work on one of these skills. It's not something that happens overnight. And I'll give you an example, medication. You know, you've heard probably that it takes 21 days to make something a habit. Well, the way I look at the medication is if your child is not taking his medication by himself at whatever age, give each section, each stage, at least 30 days, maybe 60, where you start out together filling a medicine tray for the week, and that's all you do for 30 days. Then maybe you give your child the bottle and sit there and say, okay, would you please fill the medicine tray for 30 days? And very gradually go to the point of having your child get it out of the cabinet for 30 days, having your child put it out in front of the table. You know, anything you can do, if you're starting out with it in front of the table and he has to open the pill pack to take it, that's a good place to start. Wherever you are right now, you start and you make it sort of a goal. Like, this is a great goal, so you don't need to have my assistance anymore. And if you take a year to get to the point where your child remembers to take his medication and you do it very slowly, it's not even an issue anymore. So there's no rush in any of these. The only rush is if you think your child is ready for college and these things are not yet in place, then you want to think about college readiness. And that is what we're going to talk about for a minute now. Chris, I just wanted to throw in there that we have different laws for K through 12 education and post-secondary education. The IEP and 504 plans do not go to college. You need the colleges determine for themselves, based on the original testing that's done, what accommodations. The good news is it's not hard to get accommodations in college. Keep that in mind. They want to help students. So that's all I'll say on that, because we have to move on. So college readiness. This is a very good visual. You've got three legs of the stool: academic ability, emotional regulation, and social skills. These are equally important. What happens if you take out one leg? There's no stability. Okay, they all are equal. And I stress this because many of us have children who are incredibly bright. They have the academic ability to go to college. They can do the work. They even get accepted to a college. But they don't have the social skills, or they're not emotionally mature enough to handle the rest of life at college. So readiness to leave home, all of these things need to be considered. Can they self-advocate? Have they started working on those living skills? Do they have an ability to handle emotional ups and downs? Are they toning down their impulsivity? And that's a big one for college freshmen. Are their social skills getting better? Do they have the motivation to go to college? And have they started working on their executive functioning skills? All of these need to be addressed. And if they're not ready for college, that's okay too, because there are lots of other options for life after high school. There are programs that help students get ready. There are post-secondary life skills programs. There are internship programs. There are two-year colleges that are more vocational-based. There are certificate programs to learn a skill and go right into the workforce. So there's so many things that can be done, but almost every one of these skills still needs to be in place. So I'm just going to finish up here, and then I want to leave some time for questions. I put this in here because Great. This is another interesting way to look at it. A transition is a period of time during which something or someone changes from one stage to another. But another type of transition is a sudden, unprepared change from one key to another, like a change in the key in music. We might see the first one. Your child might see a transition as the second one. No matter how much preparation there is, it still, for some reason, comes as a surprise. Think about when your child was a toddler. You'd give a 5-minute warning, a 3-minute warning, a 1-minute warning, and they would still cry, saying, I just want to play more. Your teen with ADHD has that same reaction to transitions in many cases. So the more gradual you can transition them and talk about something, the better. What I find is sometimes parents hold off talking about it because they feel like it'll be so anxiety-producing that it becomes a rushed transition. Rather, start off in 9th and 10th grade. Yes, exactly. In 9th and 10th grade, if you're on a vacation, go visit a college just for the fun of it. Go visit a work environment, you know, that you know someone who works there. Let's see what Uncle So-and-so does for a living. Go on a college visit. Do the information session and the tour. Just when there's no stress, when there's no preparation needed, it's like a fun thing to do. Let's go eat in the cafeteria, see what kind of food they have. And then it becomes less of this, you know, unknown hanging over their head when the time actually comes to start thinking about it. So I have students who resist going to college campus visits because they're so petrified. But if they had been going all along, then it wouldn't be such a big issue.
You know, I used to call it a look-and-see tour. Right. Just go, you know, and just, and I did exactly what you suggested, and I did it with schools that I knew she would probably never apply to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
I went to schools I knew she wasn't going to look at because they were not the right school or too far away or whatever, because I just wanted her to get a sense of what it felt like to be on a campus and what a city campus felt like and what a rural campus felt like. And and it was really, really effective to do that, to begin to demystify.
Yes.
You know, the fear, to sort of break it down a little bit.
That's exactly right. Okay, so when you have a student who likes to avoid things, you have this student who's prepared a PowerPoint presentation to explain why he didn't do his homework. Very good at it, but the homework took a second back seat. Okay, so last I'd like to leave you with this. The number one reason for student success at any level but especially at college when all the other supports are taken away, is meeting with someone on a regular basis so that if there is an overwhelming period, if the student starts to feel like the workload is too heavy, that they won't go into that downward spiral. And I find that students who follow this are students who have been very accepting of themselves, who don't see it as a negative that they need help, because every student, let's face it, goes to college, goes through a transition, and every student needs help at some point. But when they own this for themselves, when they accept the responsibility, when they plan ahead to seek out who is the person that's going to help me if I need help, they're going to have a much better chance of success in life and in college. Okay, so are there any other questions that we have that I haven't answered? Elaine, anything else?
Hang on, let me go. So there's a logistical question. So I want to encourage those of you who are listening either on the webcast or on the call, if you're on the phone and you'd like to ask a question, you can press star 2. And if you're on the webcast, just type it into the Q&A box, just a reminder. The logistical question is, how can we find this recording for future use, which is always a good sign, Judy. And those of you who are registered for today's webinar, we will send you a follow-up email with a link to hear the recording. All recordings on our webinars are available for our members in our Lifeline, Sanity School, PSS groups, our private coaching. Our webinars are not available to the public on the web. But they're only available for members, but there's a whole range of programs and prices that you can be a member to access all of the webinars on our site. And we keep it available for a few weeks, and it will be up and available probably for the next 2 weeks until our December 8th event. So you have a little bit of time there. So any other questions, please go ahead and type them into the Q&A box or dial star 2 to raise your hand. And I'll tell you what came up for me as I was listening, Judy, was the question, you know, there's part of what we parents struggle with is we know what to do, but how do we do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you've given is a lot of strategies for different ways for how, but that issue of buy-in is so important. That
mm-hmm.
issue of, you know, we want to foster their independence, but ultimately we want them to want to be independent.
Yes.
You know, we do a huge amount of work around that in all of our programs at Impact, but sort of what's your experience around fostering that interest, that buy-in, that motivation among the teens?
Sure. I think that students need to be allowed trial and error. They need to be allowed to fail at something small, so that they can understand that it's not the end of the world and that life goes on. And so if you can find some areas that you're willing to let go of that aren't going to be critical, for example, remembering money for school. If you don't have your money and you can't buy lunch, you'll figure out a way to have lunch. You're not going to starve. You know, not coming to their rescue for things like that, saying, well, I'm sorry, you know, you'll remember tomorrow. Little things. But when they do something that is very independent, the positive, wow, that's great. You know, I'm so glad you were able to do that. You know, let me know if you need help. But it's a change in dynamic between the parent and child. And it has to go on for a long time before the child believes that it's going to stay that way. And that's
mm-hmm.
sort of, that's the dilemma, because a lot of times parents will allow the student to do something for a while and then pull back when, let's say, their grades start to slip, jump in. Well, try not to jump in. If their grades go down, they will figure out something. And if they don't figure it out, sorry.
Or they may need help with problem solving, but it's sort of the how do you problem solve. I mean, the work that we do, we teach parents. So, and in both of these examples, if they forget their lunch or whatever, it's like, well, what worked, what didn't, what will you do differently?
Right.
So to begin to help them examine, as you say, so powerfully important, to make it okay to make mistakes, to expect
mm-hmm.
that mistakes are going to happen, right? That's normal.
And okay, so to not be critical. That's another way. But no criticism. When a student comes to me and doesn't do an assignment, my response is, okay, well, let's just work on it today. And I get a lot of people say, well, you're not teaching them responsibility. They know they didn't do it. They already feel bad. I don't have to heap that on them. My son will say all the time, Mom, I messed up. You don't need to say a word.
Yep.
I know I messed up.
I have to bite my tongue.
But
yeah.
I let him feel bad for himself. If you feel bad for him and you take over that emotional piece, he doesn't have to own it.
Exactly. That's great. And what I would add to that, sort of that next step then, is, and this is where the sort of the coach approach comes in, is to recognize, is to ask the questions, you know, to have the compassion, as you're saying, you know, man,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I bet that feels terrible, right? Acknowledge their experience,
yeah.
whatever. So
mm-hmm.
what did work, what and what didn't? And that, and all, you always
mm-hmm.
want to start with the positive. Like, what
right.
did you do successfully towards whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
and what
right.
didn't work, so that they can figure out, they can problem solve what they would do differently in the future instead of you telling them. Because if
right.
you tell
exactly.
them, they're not going to figure it out.
No, that's exactly right. And even to a young child, when you see something obvious, when a child says, why is that blue? I always say, why do you think it's blue?
Yeah. yeah.
And even as simple as that, if they say, I don't know, say, well, look over here. This is one color. That's another color. Why do you think it's that way? Let them think, because the more they do that, the less you're going to have to do for them. And it's very
yeah.
simple when it's a question and answer, but we tend to jump in and answer. And
mm-hmm.
so that's another thing to think about. Well, what do you think about this? You know, Mom, I have a problem with my teacher. Well, what might you say to the teacher? What are some words you could use? Would you like me to help you figure out a way to say it? Should be role play before you go in? You know, offer it.
And it may mm-hmm. be that with younger kids and in sort of earlier high school, it may be, would you like me to go with you while you talk to
yes.
your teacher?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Diane was just having this experience with one of her kids recently where she realized she didn't want to be the one communicating with the teacher, but her child still needed her to be there with her.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then over
it's
time,
very
by,
gradual.
You know, hopefully by junior, mm-hmm. senior year, it changes.
And again, it all depends
you,
on where you start.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, but I can tell, and part of it is recognizing not only that they got the accommodation or the change or whatever, but acknowledging them, recognizing them for the effort of advocating for themselves is really important.
Right.
I'm really proud of you for having that conversation with your teacher. I bet that was really hard to do.
Yeah,
can be so empowering for our kids.
And you know,
right?
making a list for yourself. I have actually I think he's a coach, who publishes something, gives to his clients, a list of responses. Make yourself a list of responses for those situations. Like, I'm sorry that happened. Can I help you? So that you don't have to search for words, and these are your responses. There are five responses that I'm going to say when you come back to me with whatever. And here's how I'm going to respond. And you pull out your paper, and you know what you're going to say.
Yeah,
that's a great strategy.
Well, and we mm-hmm. teach something called the ACE principle, and you can read about it. There's definitely an article on the website. The ACE
yeah.
strategy, I guess, is acknowledge compassion and then explore your options. So
yeah.
always start by acknowledging what their experience is first and having some compassion for it. Because as you say, they're already beating themselves up. They don't really need us to do it for them.
That's right. And they really
right.
are, whether they show it or not. And that's the other key. You may not see
mm-hmm.
it, but it's there.
That's a great point. Well, Judy, I think we are at the end of our hour, but I want to say thank
okay.
you so much for this conversation. I think this issue of transferring power from us to them, right, transferring their autonomy and empowering our kids to become independent and to want to become independent is one of the biggest challenges that we all face when our kids have ADHD and LD and anxiety and all of the other issues that come with it. And when you break it down and sort of identify the key points, I love those five things to make sure that they're able to do when they leave, it can really open up the conversation for parents to feel more comfortable letting go and passing the baton. And as I said to a parent yesterday I was working with, like, you know, the thing about parenting is it's a daily practice in letting go.
Yes,
every single day, our job is to do a little bit more, a little bit less, and empower them to do a little bit more.
That's right.
And that's really you've been talking about in this hour, so thank you for that. Let
my
people
pleasure.
Know who are not looking at the slides how they can find out more from you. Where do people reach you if they want to know more?
You can reach me. You can go to my website, which is BASSEducationalServices.com. You
that's
can email me.
B-A-S-S.
Yes, B-A-S-S, educationalservices.com.
Awesome.
Or you can email me at judy@basseducationalservices.com.
Fabulous. And if you have a kid who's in those teen years and you're beginning to think about college transitions, there's a lot of great information that I know Judy's got available. And I want to thank you again for the time and the collaboration and for being a really great resource for us in our community.
My pleasure, Elaine. Thank you for having me.
Truly a pleasure. All right. Have a great day, everyone. Take care. Bye.